This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
The past 5 days in this economy, because it's Friday. We'll do some climate change, because it's an economic story. And then we'll take you out for a cup of coffee. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Friday today. This one is the 17th of September. Good, as always, to have you along, everybody. I mean, let's just dig in, right? We all know what the next 6 or 7 minutes are going to be, and you don't need a whole lot of throat clearing from me to set it up. Catherine Rempel is at the Washington Post. Sudeep Reddy is at Politico. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
Yeah, sometimes it's best just to get out of the way. All right, so look, Catherine, let us start with the American consumer. I said at one point on the air this week, you know, don't discount the American consumer. It was about retail sales and how they were surprisingly up after having, you know, been bouncing around a little bit. And they're way up, by the way, from pre-pandemic. My question to you is, with benefits, the extended benefits having gone away, with Delta virus, the variant still real, how much longer can we count on the American consumer to keep driving this economy?
If you look at the consumer sentiment numbers that just came out, look, maybe we just hit a bottom. I don't know. I'm hoping things get better. But consumers just don't look terribly optimistic. And it seems like that's influenced by the pandemic, of course, the resurgence of infections and hospitalizations, keeping people away from their normal economic pre-pandemic lives, concern about prices. The survey that came out today indicated that people were pessimistic about buying conditions for homes, vehicles, durables, long-lasting goods, presumably, or they said because of high prices. So consumers seem to be a little bit unhappy right now. And that's a reflection of where the pandemic is. The pandemic is still in control. And, you know, people are buying, they're buying stuff, but the retail sales suggested that they're buying stuff that's still pandemic economy stuff, online purchases and groceries.
Sudeep, is it your sense that, I mean, I don't know that the Washington, you know, economic and political establishment doesn't care, but they're done with supporting this economy, it seems.
For the most part, yeah, they're all about finding a way to get through the COVID era without offending too many people anymore. There are Republicans who don't want to offend the anti-vaxxers. There are Democrats who clearly want to get as many shots in arms. This is the whole fight, even this afternoon over the third shot. All of that's happening at the same time in this moment. But there's not going to be more money coming forward. There's just been enough debate over inflation. It's too much of a food fight right now to add anything more in terms of additional benefits, which we're just starting to see the effects of what happens when a lot of people who are on extended unemployment benefits come off of it. That's the test of September.
Yeah. So Catherine, Sudeep mentioned inflation. I do have to point out that the Federal Open Market Committee, the interest rate committee of setting committee of the Fed meets next week. They will almost certainly not do anything on rates. They might talk a little bit about the bond buying program. I am curious, though, on your take as to whether or not Jay Powell sticks to his knitting, as it were, on the transitory inflation thing. I don't know that he can do anything else at this point, right?
Well, he obviously doesn't want to spook markets by saying, hey, we're going to have a self-sustaining inflationary spiral, even if he did think that, which I don't think he does.
Sorry to laugh.
But yeah, it seems unlikely that he would go in that direction. But I do think that the Fed is going to have the FOMC is going to have an animated meeting next week, because these supply chain issues have the bottlenecks around the world, you know, have been lasting much longer than people had forecast. Price spikes have been more persistent than had been forecast. If you look at some of the surveys that the Fed itself uses about inflation expectations, consumer inflation expectations, they do suggest that consumers are expecting higher inflation to persist for longer anyway than had been predicted a few months ago. So I do think they have to grapple with that. Even if they think this is transitory, what does transitory mean?
Yeah.
And how much longer can they continue to kind of shove whatever we're seeing in inflation and in the pricing data under that headline? It sort of starts to lose its meaning at some point. Is it transitory a couple of months, or is it a year? I don't know.
Right. Sudeep, let me turn to you were talking about food fights in Washington. I want to touch briefly on this $3.5 trillion package that the Biden administration wants and that some Democrats in the House want, that Senator Joe Manchin and Senator Sinema from Arizona have said no thank you. Between that and the reconciliation fight, I wonder how much energy Congress actually has to pay attention to this stuff, to the economics of this society today.
Well, the reconciliation pact, that's going to be the big fight of the fall, is figuring out how to get something out. Biden and had his little summit with Joe Manchin, the real leader of at least on budgetary matters, the guy who gets his say. And we'll probably see something come out of all of this, a billion or $2. That's something that will count, and Biden will look to claim victory on all of this. But one of the things Joe Manchin is raising as the senator with all the powers, he's also concerned about the inflation picture. And he's taking a lot of heat for raising those concerns. But there are a lot of people who have made a bet in this really weird, wacky recovery from a weird, wacky recession, that they understand the dynamics here, and they don't. Nobody really completely understands what's going on right now with inflation when you have supply chains so screwed up and you have a pandemic intersecting with it. And so everyone's trying to move very slowly and cautiously here, at least the people who have a lot of power, and figure out what can they do to avoid upsetting Americans any further while they try to get some legislation done.
Speaking about upsetting Americans, Catherine, they're going to be deluged with stories about the debt limit in the next six-ish weeks, plus or minus. I wonder how seriously we ought to take that, and should I stop talking about it until it actually happens?
I don't know. I'm very nervous about this.
Oh, are you really?
I'm very nervous.
Wow.
Yes, because
you're not – okay, sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that is not a presentation that you usually make. You don't usually say that stuff.
Well, I'm nervous because the Democrats have said they don't want to do this through reconciliation. At this point, even if they were reconciliation, meaning with a party line vote, no Republicans needed. And at this point, if they were going to do it through reconciliation, they have to go back and change the budget resolution and do a whole bunch of other annoying legislative things that take a while. So, and meanwhile, they're trying to negotiate, as Sudeep said, their spending plans. So it's not clear that they really have time baked in to do all of that, if they even did change their minds. Meanwhile, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has said, well, don't count on Republican votes, which you would need if you were going to either raise or suspend the debt limit through the normal legislative process. And Democrats seem to think he's bluffing. But remember, there were showdowns over the debt limit in the past when the Republican Party seemed a little more, I don't know if sane is the right word, but less willing to ground it. Yeah. So when the party seemed less willing to do outrageous things. And so I'm concerned that nobody, everybody's kind of assuming that the other side will blink and do the right thing and raise the debt limit. And I don't know that that's going to happen.
Sudeep, real quick, I am not a Washington reporter, but my understanding of Senator McConnell is that he don't bluff.
Exactly. Look, this is one of those things that the Democrats can figure out a way to do it if they have to do it on their own. The debt limit probably will be raised, but like most issues in Washington, it could lead to a bit of a tantrum, and markets will have a tantrum, and then it'll get raised. But why we can't do anything without these kinds of meltdowns? Well, that's always the persistent, everlasting question of Washington.
That is why we can't have nice things. Sudeep Reddy at Politico, Catherine Rempel at The Washington Post. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Kai.
Have a nice weekend. On Wall Street today, sideways still go the major indices. Bond yields, too, mostly. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We reached out to the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach this morning just to check in on those container ship traffic jams we have been telling you about. A new record as of yesterday, 63 ships with hundreds of thousands of containers full of stuff just floating around at anchor, waiting to come in and unload. And if you are thinking right now, you know, that's got to have ripple effects through the rest of the economy, you would be right. And as Marketplace's Caroline Champlin reminds us, L.A. and Long Beach are not the only ports in this country that are jammed up.
An airline pilot was flying over the port of L.A. when he took a picture and sent it to his neighbor, Zach Rogers. He's a professor of supply chain management at Colorado State University.
There was 40 ships that I was able to count sitting in San Pedro. I mean, he took the picture because he was thinking, this is totally unusual.
Lately, it hasn't been. Ports all up and down California have been dealing with delays. Rogers says he doesn't think the congestion will go away on its own.
People waiting for demand to come back down are going to be waiting for a very long time.
For one, he says, warehouse capacity should expand. Elsewhere in the country, the ports of New York and New Jersey are close to capacity. Sam Ruda is a director at the Port Authority.
Yes, we are always acutely aware space on the terminal is not infinite.
Ruda says the port hasn't had a big backlog of ships like LA's, only 4 at Anchorage yesterday. But getting trucks out of the port has been slow.
So we've had periods when it's been difficult, the lines have been long.
Importers may want to reconsider which ports they're using, says Margaret Kidd, a professor of supply chain and logistics at the University of Houston.
I mean, if I was running the import operations for a major corporation, I would certainly think about congestion and where there are pockets of ease in entering the U.S. markets.
She says Savannah, Charleston, and Houston, where she is, could be good alternatives, even for cargo coming across the Pacific. I'm Caroline Champlin for Marketplace.
Today in Oh Look, there's another supply chain issue. General Motors says it's extending a pause in production of its main electric vehicle, the Chevy Bolt, that through mid-October, thanks to a shortage of batteries and also semiconductors. We talk a lot on this program about the global chip shortage and what it means. I am not sure, though, we have done the why is there a never-ending chip shortage story. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra is on it.
Shortages happen when the demand for something is higher than the supply. When it comes to computer chips, there are problems on both sides of that equation. First, in the pandemic, demand for chips went up. Morris Cohen teaches operations and information management at the Wharton School.
The consumption of chips has skyrocketed because more and more people are buying computers and various electronic devices as they're stuck at home.
And then there's a supply problem. Art Wheaton at Cornell University's ILR school says that's because of natural disasters in at least 3 countries.
So one of the major chip suppliers in Japan had a fire. Texas for Intel had a problem with the winter storms. And in Taiwan, which is one of the largest producers in the world of these chips, they're having a drought, and making computer chips requires lots of water, so they have been impacted.
Also, the companies that make chips haven't been able to find enough workers, and there are shipping bottlenecks.
A lot of them go through China as one of the major ports, and they had a COVID outbreak, which stopped people from unloading and loading these container ships. And then when you get a backlog of those, it's hard to unload them and get caught up, especially if you're having a labor shortage.
I've been talking about the chip shortage broadly here, but it's worth noting for the car industry, there's another problem. Car makers were expecting demand to slow down during COVID, so they canceled a lot of their orders for chips. And now they're at the back of the line. I'm Mary Elsegarra for Marketplace.
Coming up.
If this bad thing happened in the world, would you be ready for it?
I mean, I hope so. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials, down 166 points today. That is 0.4%. Finished at 34,584. The NASDAQ subtracted 137 points. That's about 0.9%, 15,043. The S&P 500 lowered 40 points, also 0.9%, 44,032. For the week, Dow basically flat. The NASDAQ off 0.4%. S&P 500 down about 0.5%. Marielle looked into what's going on with the chip shortage, so let's power on over to Intel, shall we? Sputtered down 1%. Texas Instruments unplugged about 0.2%. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 1.36%, relatively high compared to where it's been, but still kind of sideways. For the yield, you're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. The Fed meets next week, as Sudeep and Catherine and I were talking about. The Federal Open Market Committee's first get-together since Hurricane Ida devastated Louisiana and parts of the Gulf Coast and caused all that catastrophic flooding in New York, too. Climate and the economic risks of a warming planet have become a thing for the Fed lately. Chair Jay Powell's term is up in 3 or 4 months, and a group of progressive Democrats is calling for President Biden to appoint a Fed chair who will do more about climate change. Claudia Sahm is a former Fed economist. She is currently a senior fellow at the Jane Family Institute. She's written about the central bank and what it could actually do. And she says the list doesn't start at the Fed.
I feel very strongly that Congress needs to set the agenda in how economic institutions, government institutions, fight climate change, or address the risk it's posing, the changes that are happening in the economy. The Federal Reserve follows orders. Congress tells it what to do, and it does that job to the best of its ability. As the law is currently written, the Fed does not have explicit duties with climate change. But what I've argued is the Fed can totally be an assist.
Yeah, so wait.
Congress, oh, go ahead, sorry.
Sorry, on that assist thing, before we go on, what do you make then of members of Congress, most of them on the progressive side of the aisle, saying the Fed has to do something now and the rest of Congress is, worried about debt limits and reconciliation and all the rest of that?
Well, I give those members of Congress a lot of credit for making sure that the discussion of climate change stay front and center. I disagree with the calls to have the Fed do the efforts, and I think those discussions should be pointed back at Congress. Mm-hmm. They need to get a plan. They need to pass legislation.
Okay, so failing that, nuts and bolts, what can the Fed do in your estimation?
Right. So the first thing the Federal Reserve can do is put its immense resources into the research. There's a lot of great research out there right now. The Federal Reserve can bring it in-house, think about it in a policy framework, and elevate it. That is happening right now. The San Francisco Fed is leading in those efforts. The other place where the Federal Reserve can start to really move the needle, and other central banks have done this, they do these things called stress tests. Mm-hmm. Basically, they give the banks a test and see, hey, if this bad thing happened in the world, would you be ready for it? And the other central banks that have run these scenarios, not surprisingly, a lot of the banks aren't prepared for existential risk. What the Fed can do is put that in the regular stress test that they already do. So that's something the Fed has not done, and there is a very clear path to doing that.
Let's get then to the wonky one, which is lending facilities for climate investments. You have to explain what these lending facilities are, right, and how they might work. Because the Fed has a relatively well-established history of setting up these lending facilities in times of crisis.
Right. So the reason that we have the Federal Reserve is to be the lender of last resort. So in a big crisis, the Federal Reserve is there to get the money to institutions. It's been primarily financial institutions up until this crisis. Get the money to get through it. You know, in spirit, you could imagine an emergency lending facility to get the loans out to, say, state and local governments doing investments in climate, or businesses that are trying to really do something new and innovative to reduce their carbon footprint. But again, Congress would have to set up those emergency facilities. Right now, the Fed does not have the authority to create a new facility on its own. I think this one, it would be a rather expansive interpretation of emergency if we said climate change. But it's just an example that the Fed could be part of the pipes.
Here's the question, though, right? The Fed is, by its very nature, a really cautious institution. So far, so good, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Given that caution, and the politics involved with the Federal Reserve and all of that, how likely do you think it is that they take these significant steps that you've laid out?
Yeah. So part of being cautious is you follow the rules. And if the rules change, the Fed changes. So if Congress says you're going to be in a space where you're making climate-related loans, guess what? The Fed does it, and they do it very effectively. I mean, this is one of the reasons that members of Congress that have disagreements about how urgent climate change is, have disagreements about how many authorities and responsibilities the Fed should have, they will fight back very hard on the Fed becoming part of the picture, because they know the Fed will get the job done.
Claudia Somm used to work at the Fed. She is now a senior fellow at the Jane Family Institute. Dr. Somm, thanks for your time, ma'am. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
None of my business, perhaps, but how are you getting your caffeine fix these days? Figure out how to use that French press you bought last year during lockdown? Getting through your afternoon Zooms without that midday Frappuccino you relied on in the before times? I'm asking because Dutch Bros, Oregon-based but with drive-through coffee kiosks scattered mostly on the West Coast, had an impressive IPO this week. With so many people working from home, though, kind of does seem like an odd time for a company that depends on the morning commute to go public, no? But as Marketplace's Matt Levin explains, coffee habits can change, you know.
One thing I don't miss from the before times, that feeling when you haven't had any coffee and you're stuck in the back of a 1,000-person line at Starbucks wondering if you're being punished for something. Well, the before times are alive and well, at least at this Dutch Bros kiosk in a South Sacramento suburb. I'm in one of the two drive-thru lanes across from interior decorator Casey Keys.
I'm going to get a caramelizer.
What's a caramelizer?
Probably be their version of like a Starbucks caramel macchiato.
I'm in my Camry. Both lanes are packed with about 10 cars apiece. Key says the lines are almost always this long. That doesn't surprise Sean Dunlop, an analyst with Morningstar. These days, the suburbs are humming with remote workers.
Real estate with a drive-thru is attractive because people are going to the coffee shop to grab coffee on the way to a soccer game.
or on their way to school now that that's happening again, and customers still feel safer in their cars with the Delta variant surging. Longer term, Dunlop says coffee companies are pivoting towards drive-thrus because they require fewer employees.
We're still about 1 million workers short in the restaurant industry, and wages have risen about 10%. So drive-thru offers a way to take a little bit of labor out of the equation.
Dutch Bros specializes in that gray area where coffee meets dessert, like Keyes' $3 caramelizer. That menu makes its expansion plans less dependent on the morning commute, says Caleb Bryant, an analyst with Mintel.
But there's been a notable increase in consumers ordering specialty coffee beverages, cold coffee beverages, many flavorful coffee beverages.
Because you can brew plain old drip coffee at home. But if you're out, you want something special, like the macadamia nut flavored Annihilator I ended up ordering.
Does any whip or drizzle on that?
Oh, give me both the whip and the drizzle.
Gotcha.
I deserved it. It was a long line. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
That bridge notwithstanding, I did not have Levin figured for a whip and a drizzle kind of guy. Anyway, this final note on the way out today, which I found kind of interesting in a, kind of way. You know how I mention those TSA numbers every now and then and how they're dropping as Delta has been rising? That around 1.2 million people flying every day, basically the levels back in May. Well, from Justin Fox at Bloomberg, this semi-analog, the New York City MTA, subways specifically, is going the other way, topped 3 million people this past Tuesday. Just Tuesday, by the way, the first time over 3 million people since March of last year. All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context, which, full disclosure, I was prompted to check after paying $4.50 a gallon today to fill up the minivan. Crude oil, the U.S. benchmark West Texas Intermediate, down just a bit today, still $71.97 a barrel. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's a speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.